Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week, Ted Rall. Ted Rall is a cartoonist and a columnist, known, I am sure, to many of you. His cartoons are often by far the best thing on editorial and opinion pages in U.S. newspapers, and you can find them all over the internet, including at rall.com. That's RALL.com. Ted Rall, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really appreciate it.
I've been wanting to have you on this show for many months, and we had planned this prior to the incident that has sort of put political cartoonists in the news in a new way, the killing in Paris, France, at the Charlie Hebdo offices. What is your general thinking on how we are not properly understanding that incident?
Well, I think that we are generally understanding it pretty well. I mean, you know, obviously, most people who have been following the story are aware of some of the ironies involved, such as the French government cracking down on the Muslim comedian, arresting him, Dieudonné. We're seeing, you know, this. So a couple of days after a massive rally led by the government, supposedly in favor of free speech, we have the roundup of over 50 people just for saying something. We have the spectacle of radical Islamists gunning down cartoonists at their desks, along with editors and some police officers. But we also have the more troubling, from an American point of view, in particular, cartoons themselves, and the fact that they were clearly meant to provoke, and they fall outside of the progressive tradition of satire that we understand here in the U.S. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. I mean, I read French, I've spent time with French cartoonists, and I understand those cartoons pretty much as well as anyone can, being a cartoonist who also has had my work translated into French and who, you know, reads those cartoons a lot, and I grew up with them. And even so, I think people are trying to understand them through the lens of an American American media culture that just isn't the case in France. In France, they don't have a comfort the afflicted, afflict the comfortable satirical culture. In France, the idea of equality, whether you agree with it or not, is to pick on everyone equally, the rich, the poor, whites, blacks, disadvantaged, advantaged, powerful. And so that's their idea of wielding satire. Here in the U.S., that's considered, in the case of, for example, making fun of Islam at a time when the U.S. is engaged at war in numerous Muslim countries, is assassinating people with drones, keeping people detained and tortured in camps, and so on, we have to view Muslims as a disadvantaged, oppressed group from the viewpoint of the U.S. government and the system here. And so, therefore, that making fun of Islam or Muslims, whatever you think of Islam, is viewed as punching down. And that's bad. We don't do that here.
And that's but not the case in France, where their government is also participating in a lot of those U.S. wars and leading the push for wars in places like Libya, and where there are laws restricting the rights of Muslims and a largely segregated population of largely relatively poor Muslims in French society. That the same thing doesn't apply there?
Well, I certainly have problems with the approach that the Charlie Hebdo follows. I feel that anything that supports this government narrative that you described is wrong and shouldn't be contributed to. And in fact, there were internal splits within the staff of Charlie Hebdo in the past that have led to public and private firings and people leaving of their own accord who didn't agree that they should do, who felt exactly the way that you described. And, you know, I agree with you. I wouldn't do those cartoons. But But I think it's just important when we're looking at that stuff to just understand that there is a context that is difficult for Americans to get. There's on one level, there's a lot of literary and cultural puns that we don't get when we look at those cartoons, especially when they're translated. The puns completely vanish.
And
there's a lot of tongue firmly in cheek. Like some of the cultural context is that you're supposed to see it, a lot of this stuff, as meta, as in we're not really so much creating racist cartoons. We're depicting what racism is like. I mean, let me give you an example. I did a cartoon one time where I depict a character in my cartoon shouting at another character in the cartoon. Well, that's not me talking. I'm depicting a right-wing in that cartoon. And the way I'm signifying that he's a right-wing is by having him say that, right? So in a sense, that's what a lot of these cartoonists say they're doing. And I think it sometimes works. But it's a high wire act, you know? I mean, especially when these cartoons travel outside of their usual venue of publication. I mean, when a cartoon is, you know, in a newspaper, in print, and the print readers develop a sort of normal day-to-day relationship or week-to-week relationship with the artist, they sort of learn to trust you. So, for example, I'm in the LA Times. I've been in there for years. If I do a cartoon that's sarcastic about race, my minority readers are likely to understand that they're going to see, Ted's not a racist, so there's probably sarcasm here. But let's say someone puts that cartoon on the internet and says, look at this racist cartoon. And then it goes onto websites that are read by people who've never seen my work before. Presented that way, teed up that way, people are likely to agree that it's a racist cartoon. Or in the case of the cartoon that I mentioned, the reason I mentioned it is because online there were people who said, look, that's a homophobic cartoon. So it's complicated. You know, these issues have to be sliced and diced. And those guys, they definitely erred on the side of recklessness. There's no question about it.
Clearly their cartoons must be funnier if I were French, because I don't find them funny, and clearly somebody must. But also my impression is that they didn't go after every religious group and every racial minority group and so forth in equal measure. Not that any particular magazine or cartoonist must do so, but that they erred on the side of going after the same sort of groups that their nations and NATO and the U.S. military have been going after. But even if it were all equally applied and that criticism weren't there, there are those who object to going after people's religions because they are so passionate about their religions. And you clearly disagree, as near the top of your blog at rawl.com, it says, I have been mocking religious fanatics, which might get me killed. Oh, well, it's worth it.
That listing is sarcastic because I have this meme that I use from now and then about Zoroastrianism having taken over America. Obviously, that's not likely to happen. It is our first monotheistic religion, though. People should know that. So I printed old Zoroastrian-themed cartoons to show that I've been provoking the Zoroastrians and that the Zoroastrians might come after me any time. But I do, nevertheless, think that, look, religion is not true. Okay, so on that basis alone, religion deserves to be made fun of. Religion is intimately intertwined with politics and oppression, and most of all, it's not true. So I mean, I think it's fine to make fun of anything, especially something that did I mention? It's not true. So I don't care if people are offended because I make fun of their fictional sky god. It's ridiculous. But that said, okay, I think that with the Charlie Hebdo guys, I don't know if anyone's done, you know, I would love to see someone do a survey of, you know, count up kind of, if you could do that, how many, what percentage, if you could quantify, of their attacks on religion were focused on Islam, which how many on Catholicism and so on. And I would be interested in that. I mean, from what I can gather, my general impression, having not read Charlie Hebdo every issue, but having picked it up now and then, is that they disproportionately went after Muslims in recent years. And my guess is that what's working here is kind of two things. One that's kind of insidious, and one that's relatively innocent. And I'll start with the innocent one. I think that French cartoonists, in particular the guys at Charlie Hebdo, the more reaction they got, the more they liked to push the envelope. It's a very child, you know, cartoonists are the people who are still doing something for a living that most kids stop doing when they're 12 or 13. So they have this, you know, it's this very childish mentality, childlike mentality of, you know, the dog that barks loudest is the one that, you're going to throw another rock at it because you want to hear it bark even louder. And I think that's why, you know, I mean, you can make, Catholics are so used to being made fun of that through Monty Python and everything else that they're like, they shrug their shoulders. Muslims freak out and burn down embassies. So for a cartoonist, hey, that's results. I'm not saying they wanted riots or anyone to die, but it's a lot more exciting. It's more of a high wire act. But I think the more insidious thing is what's going on. You can't separate the cartoonist from the culture or the political situation in the country where they're in. And I think that my argument would have been, if I were on staff there, or if I were just having this conversation with them now, would be that, look, you want to be on the side of the angels, not on the side of the devils. And the government is the side of the devils. And any aid and comfort you provide them with, even if it's in the service of making fun of Islam, which, you know, is a lie because all religions are lies, is just something, maybe you should do something else. It's a taste issue. It's a political issue. It's a judgment call, and it's not the judgment call that, it's the opposite of the judgment call I would make. I don't do that kind of work. I view Muslims as an oppressed minority. And I think that, you know, for elite French journalist types, they subscribe to a sort of quote-unquote traditionally white Catholic, secular Catholic, culturally Catholic French idea of France that's a little bit obsolete given the fact that there's 5 million Muslims living in France and all sorts of other minorities. You know, I mean, it's a very multicultural society. You know, the land of the beret and the baguette and the accordion, you know, that's really just that idea is over, really. But yeah, some people try to hold on to it. That's what Marine Le Pen is all about, trying to hold on to that.
Yeah, at the expense of others. We're speaking with Ted Rall, a terrific cartoonist and columnist. His website is rall.com, R-A-L-L.com. You mentioned, Ted, that cartoonists are doing behavior of 12 or 13-year-olds, and yet it seems there's a huge value for activism and for bettering the world in being able to laugh at those, particularly at those in power, being able to mock those in power. Many of these nonviolent movements and revolutions would get nowhere without that tool, and I hate the idea of depriving ourselves of it in order to offend nobody, but it seems to be a very thin line between mocking somebody and hating somebody, and you can't control how your readers are going to react, and we have no idea what's going on inside the minds of the cartoonist before they produce their cartoons. Where do you draw that line?
Well, I that's right, and that's a problem that you know I've been wrestling with, like, you know, like in the example we were discussing earlier about context. It's a problem that all cartoonists have been wrestling with for a long time. I mean, like, it used to, the traditional in the U.S., the traditional place that editorial cartoons were read, and the reason that they're called editorial cartoons is because they appeared on the editorial page, which was, aside for the cartoon, from the cartoon, a sea of gray prose. So by the time that a reader found herself or himself on the editorial page, which probably is only exceeded in sheer boredom by the classified ads. It was a safe bet that you were talking about a reader who was familiar with the day's events and the issues of the week. That's no longer true because most of your readers now are online. So one of the ways that I've managed to adjust, and it took me a long time to figure this out, was to now, whenever I do a cartoon about an issue that is not very well understood to have happened, for example, the Paris shootings, if it's more obscure, or even a little obscure, I will tee up the issue at the beginning of the cartoon and say, okay, so this happened. Now I'm going to tell you what I think. Or, hey, this happened, so, you know, if this happens, then will this happen next? And so it requires more explanation. Another way, I mean, the Internet also offers, like all double-edged swords, it offers you a way out, too. It allows you to explain yourself. I mean, the Charlie Hebdo guys, they didn't do this, but they could have blogged. And a lot of cartoonists do. So when people like me and other political cartoonists in the U.S. post our comics, we often post a paragraph or two about our thinking behind the work, so that if anyone looks at it and says, what the f***, they can then go to the website, follow the link, they Google you, they find that cartoon, and then they say, oh, okay, all right. And mostly, you know, that usually calms people down. I mean, imagine if the Charlie Hebdo guys had been able to explain, like, look, we're actually mocking racism here, or we're mocking Islamophobia, like by drawing these Muslims with, like, the crazy noses and, you know, the crazy outfits with the, you know, very virulently Islamophobic imagery. Like, no, we're not Islamophobic. And those guys would be horrified to be accused of being Islamophobic. They definitely didn't consider themselves that at all. They were all people from the left. The editor-in-chief was a communist. That would have helped. Might not have stopped them from being killed, but it certainly would have, you know, you have to explain yourself sometimes. I mean, satire is tricky, and if people don't know, you know, it's one thing to be killed over a cartoon, but it's another to be killed over a cartoon because someone didn't understand it.
Indeed. Ted Rall, you have now said a few words that I'm going to have to go back and bleep, or I will get radio stations thrown off the air, which is totally fine, and it'll sound great with the bleeps. This is a lead into the question, which is, when you're making cartoons, what stupid, superficial ways like that, and what substantive ways, if any, do you have to censor them?
Well, you know, there's limits in every country. In the U.S., libel is always a concern. You know, there's the question of whether you could win a case, and there's the question of whether you want to provoke someone who might be litigious into suing you. I mean, for example, Disney is notoriously litigious. So, you know, do you want to? A lot of cartoonists who would use Disney, go after Disney with a cartoon, or might use Disney characters in a cartoon in order to make fun of Disney, will not do so because they're worried about being sued. That's one of the things we know. There's certainly legit libel issues, like if you know, you don't want to libel anyone. But sometimes you might do it inadvertently. There's obscenity issues. Sometimes. And then, of course, where things get dicey is judgment calls. I had a cartoon censored back in the early 90s, right, shortly after the Gulf War, when a story came out in New York Newsday that said that American troops in the Gulf War had outfitted their tanks with bulldozer attachments and had used them to bury Iraqi soldiers alive in the desert in their trenches, and that they had... And that they had buried thousands of Iraqi troops alive this way. And the way we found out about it is that so many vets were coming back with PTSD. And so I did a cartoon about that. The cartoon was rejected on political grounds by a progressive. And my editor was definitely a liberal Democrat. And she said that she took offense because she felt that the veterans were victims as well, which I suppose you could argue they were. I had far less sympathy for them because they were volunteers, but that's definitely a legitimate, you know, argument. But that's the kind of thing that, you know, you just get, you know, a different editor would not have had a problem with that cartoon and would have sent it out.
as an activist, I often want to see stories get into the news that aren't there at all, as opposed to seeing stories that are in the corporate media get done better, the way that more progressive media outlets and productions tend to redo stories in a better way. And so I'm sitting this week in the trial of Jeffrey Sterling, and people say, Jeffrey who? Because he hasn't even been demonized like Chelsea Manning, so you can't twist it into a different perspective. It's not there at all. Are you able to take something that isn't in the news at all and put it there, or do you have to start with what some segment of the population has heard about?
Well, I think this gets back to what I was saying earlier about needing to tee up a story. You definitely can bring up anything you want, and you can, if you tee it up and explain what's going on, yeah, you can do it. I mean, that's where editorial cartooning starts to become not the ideal venue but comics journalism, more long form, graphic novel style, multiple pages, many panels. That's where that stuff tends to be really effective. And I've done that in my books about Afghanistan. And, you know, I mean, those are all talking about stories that originate with me, my own reporting, and other cartoonists. Many other cartoonists do this too. It's hard to get funding for it, but it's a very effective form. And, you know, I think it's just in its infancy. You're starting to see websites like Vox and Medium and Vice and a few others dabbling with it, but it definitely, there needs to be more. And that's where you can, you know, you could take a story like the trial, your trial, and that same story could be done all in comics, and it would be, you know, just a different way to present the same thing.
Yeah, maybe just not as immediate or as far-reaching, try to get people.
It couldn't be done as fast. That's
right.
Probably one of the big problems, because comics take time to draw.
There ought to be, judging by the outpouring of official widespread support for freedom of speech and cartoonists, a burst of funding and backing and support for outrageous editorial cartoons just flooding your way now. And yet, we saw this crowd marching in the street of world leaders with nobody marching behind them, who back home are whipping bloggers and prosecuting whistleblowers and imprisoning journalists. What's the reality here, in particular in this country?
Well, I mean, the reality in this country is that the system has eliminated satire from newspapers, magazines, and websites. I mean, look, there are 25 staffers left at Charlie Hebdo today. That's the same number of political cartoonists in the United States. There are more in Zambia. There are more in Iran. There are more in Russia. And the number of political cartoonists on staff at a magazine, a political magazine, you know, whether it's the left, like The Nation or The Progressive or Mother Jones, or on the right, like Reason or National Review or Weekly Standard, is zero. None of them have a staff political cartoonist. That's just unheard of in any other country. You have all the political websites like Daily Beast, Huffington Post, Salon, Slate, and so on. Again, zero political cartoonists. There's no country that has less satire. I mean, television, you know, Jon Stewart's about as wild and crazy as he gets politically on television, and he's really bland and very mainstream and very corporate, and he routinely has neocons on his show, like William Crystal. I stopped watching. It's just disgusting. Yeah, we don't have any kind of that. I mean, look, the shooting happened on a Wednesday. That Thursday, a day later, the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel fired its political cartoonist, Chan Lo, which I thought was just awesome timing. And so we went from 26 to 25.
We have maybe less satire across the board in every medium, including text, I'm guessing, having written satire and had it taken seriously so many times. Is there something about respect for authority, or it's just a artistic preference, or why do we not
it's
do
not,
satire?
Well, I mean, satire is one of those things where it has to be taught. I remember when I was a kid, we studied in seventh grade A Modest Proposal, and we had to be explained to us, and so we literally learned about sarcasm and droll dry irony. People, kids don't get that education now, and more to the point, they don't see the stuff in print anymore. They don't see it. It's not around. They don't read the paper. If they did read the paper, satire wouldn't be in there. I mean, look, Art Buchwald wasn't exactly trying to bring about the revolution, but, you know, he was a political satirist. There's nothing, you know, Dave Barry isn't exactly a wild and crazy guy, but, you know, he was humor in the paper. Those guys could never get a single newspaper today to pay them a single dollar. There's literally no market whatsoever for humorous essays. I mean, I do work for Mad Magazine. They don't print any humorous essays at all. I mean, it's a comics magazine, and that's fine, and I love Mad. I love being in there. But, I mean, where do you go if you want to be in something like, say, Spy or National Lampoon? There's nothing like that. There's literally just no market at all. It's kind of incredible because, hey, you know, 320 million people, there's some funny people. You know, we're not all boring.
And yet you have managed amazingly to get quite powerful and radical statements into places like the LA Times. I went one day last week to the LA Times opinion section online, and I saw a column arguing that the inequality problem in this country could be addressed by expanding the military. I saw a column arguing that if you don't like prisons, you should be glad the governor of Virginia is getting off so lightly. I saw a column arguing that we can end torture by creating yet another ban on torture through Congress rather than enforcing the existing ones against torturers. And so on. I mean, this was the range of opinion. And then there's Ted Rall cartoons, you know, that are totally against just about everything else I'm seeing there. How do you manage? Is it because of the medium or because of your long-standing relationship with readers there? How do you manage not to get thrown out?
It's the long-standing relationship with readers now, but the tricky part is getting in the first place. And the answer there is it's always about personal relationships. The editor who brought me on at the Times knew me through her previous position as editor of LA Weekly. So she came from a progressive media background and alternative press. It's kind of like when I was a syndicate executive for 3 years at United Media. And, you know, I didn't hire, you know, a bunch of right-wingers. You know, I mean, I brought on progressives. I brought on one of the leading African-American cartoonists, Keith Knight, to do a comic strip, which he's still doing, and he's very successful. A bunch of young people, a lot of women. You know, in 3 years, I added more diversity to the American field of comic strips than probably had existed in 100 years. And that was at a time when newspapers were crumbling.
We are all the better off for it, and people can check out your work, Ted Rall, at rall.com. Ted, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much, David. I really appreciate it.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.